Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 103 and a half. My name is John Morgan. Cold coffee is, I don't know, comfortable on his couch somewhere in Las Vegas. He'll be doing some editing here in a little bit when we send all this to him. He is not here in London. You heard the earlier episode this week. He took vacation like a dummy and left right before fight time. But that's all right, because that means I got to have a week with the European crew.
Yeah, you did.
That is Abby Subban over there, videographer extraordinaire, who threw down taking the place of One Cold Coffee this week. Not just assisting, but just completely replaced him. And we might have to go with that arrangement moving forward.
Yeah, you do.
All right. Simon Head is with me as well. Formerly of The Sun, currently the host of the Brit Pack. And it was nice to have Simon aboard as well. Part of the MMA Junkie crew this week, man. It was a pleasure.
It's been great fun, mate. It's been great fun. Love being part of the team. And we've had a fun week, haven't we?
We have, man. It's been good. We just wrapped up with the UFC Fight Night 107, Manoa versus Anderson. We were at the O2 just down the road. We are nearing 6 a.m. this morning, but that's how we do. We stay up late. We get our work done, and we partake of our favorite frosty beverages and other activities as I look across the table at one of our members.
Are you picking that up? All
of it. All right. Listen, UFC Fight Night 107 was tonight. It was a card that was pooped on pretty much, more or less, by everybody involved. It was a fight pass card. It even got crazy at the end. It went from 13 fights to 11 in the course of 24 hours with two scratches. It was definitely missing what we thought. I don't say that we thought. I mean, it definitely felt like it was missing, like, that big main event or whatever. But I got to say, guys, I mean, with everything in the books, and everybody, it's a card that nobody talks about that are amazing. Well, I mean, no, sometimes it is, sometimes not. You know what I mean? There were some fights that didn't exactly thrill me tonight. But I got to say, at the end of the night, when the fights were over, I kind of thought, good night of fights.
We walked away thinking that was actually quite a good fun night of fights.
Right.
You look down the fight card. There were actually only four finishes on that card.
That's crazy.
But all four of those finishes had a really big story behind them. Mm-hmm. And so much to talk about and unpack from this show. We had a couple of nondescript fights, but there are some big stories and big takeaways from this night. It was entertaining stuff. And for those people who paid their tickets and turned up at the O2, I think they'd have gone away pretty happy with what they saw.
And they still did pretty good. I mean, they still did $15,000 north of a $2 million gate. That's not bad, but I mean, I think pretty much what we've been saying the whole week is true. I do think that the next time they come to London, they're going to have to make sure they got a main event lined up. I think people will probably, you know, be a little wary of spending their money. Hell, we talked to some, you know, close pals of ours, some European friends of ours that were here at the MMA Junkie Pad last night that said exactly what we had been thinking all along, that listen, man, they're going to have to bring it next time. But I agree with you. I mean, I think if you spent your money tonight, you probably thought, man, you know what? I had some fun.
I definitely look, when this card was, when the main event was announced, I just completely blocked it out. I was just like, okay, right. As much as I like Jimmy Manoa, I was just like, okay, right. London's next month. That's what I'm covering. Done. But as we got closer to it, I started looking at the card. Simon Head was constantly prepping for the event and kept calling me, and then he kept mentioning matchups, and I was like, oh yeah, that's on the card. Oh yeah, that's on the card. And then when time came, I was just like, okay, I am actually excited for this card.
It was, and I think it actually paid off a little bit tonight. I mean, let's just talk about the main event right away. Jimmy Manoa defeated Corey Anderson. First round knockout, just a little bit over 3 minutes, and guys, well, let's just get this out of the way first. I'm in last place in the MMA Junkie staff picks.
And yeah, you are.
And let me tell you about tonight. I went 0-4. 0-4. So not only was I already in last place, I haven't even seen the updated standings. I might not look at the updated standings. I don't think I want to know about the updated standings. Obviously, I didn't gain ground on anybody. But it's embarrassing. So I just want to get that out of the way because I'm not going to lie, I'm feeling pretty embarrassed.
You've never been there before, though, right?
Oh, I've never been in the cellar. This is the first time I've ever been in the cellar. First time ever. So, yeah, I need something to change it up. You got some bad mojo going right now.
For real.
All right, let's talk about the main event. I had Corey Anderson. Going into the fight, we talked about it. We did our staff picks. We discussed it here on the podcast. My thinking was, okay, Jimmy Manuel, one-dimensional. I'm sorry. That was my thought. One-dimensional. Hell of a striker. Good fighter. Not a great fighter. Maybe that's what we know about Corey Anderson now, too, that at this point in time in his career, he's a good fighter, not a great fighter. Because what I thought to myself is that, listen, man, Corey Anderson is going to be able to deal with the striking of Jimmy Manoa. He's going to, you know, make this thing ugly. I really thought it was going to be kind of an ugly main event. You know what I mean? A lot of wall install, a lot of clinching, a couple little takedowns here and there. You know, maybe Corey gets tagged a little bit here and there, but he rights the ship and comes at him. And that was not it at all. Man, Jimmy Manoa stuffed every takedown, looked kind of – just the way he walked into the cage, man, the way he came in tonight. He's always got a little bit of a swagger about him, a little bit of air about him. But, I mean, the way he came in tonight just looked relaxed from the second he walked in, soaking it all in, man, enjoying it from the crowd. And then once he got in there, man, I mean, just – it made Corey's takedown attempts look like he was an amateur. And then, of course, the just, you know, big left hand, which really, I mean, didn't look incredibly powerful, but just goes to show you how much strength he has. Turned things over, caught it right on the button. Impressed, man. Jimmy Manoa, I don't want to say it's one of his best performances ever, but I don't know, man. I thought it looked pretty good against a guy that I have a lot of respect for in Corey Anderson.
That left hook is his honey punch. He's put so many people away down the years with that. Obviously, now he's fighting at a much, much higher level than most of those KOs that he's made with that left hook. But he's now done it in back-to-back shows. He did it with OSP. That was a left hook knockout. This was a left hook knockout. This was much more spectacular. Because it was a one hitter quitter against OSP. He rocked him first and then put him away with the second. This one, it only needed one.
And I'll tell you what, man, maybe I should have learned my lesson in the OSP fight, but I kind of in the OSP fight thought that he was losing that fight, and then the OSP just got tired, and that's what changed everything. And I just chalked it up to, like, it looked like Vince was just done. And then Jimmy caught him.
Yeah, I think I kind of looked at it differently. And unlike you, I picked Manoa to win by knockout inside two rounds.
All right, thanks, man.
So, but I'm not on your picks list, so you're quite fortunate in that regard.
One more person on top of me.
Yeah, he is.
But the OSP fight, I actually took quite a bit of positivity from that in terms of Jimmy Manoa's potential performance tonight. I thought he showed vastly improved takedown defense. We know he's been working on that extensively up there at All Stars, which is an underrated gym, I think. It's one of the top gyms in Europe for sure. And he's got some good training partners like there in Alex Gustafsson, Ilir Latifi. And he's been working his game very well. His striking has always been there, but that seems to be tightening up as well. He's been guilty
of... Physically looks good. I mean, he's always looked good, but physically, I felt like he looked...
He looks bigger.
Like
he looked bigger. I talked to John Gooden, and this is the first time, pretty much, that Jimmy's had to really cut any weight.
Interesting.
He's been thicker
and stronger this week.
He's been on the cusp of 205, but this time he's needed to cut a little bit of weight. He was a bigger guy in there, but his striking just gets a little bit sharper. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of his early UFC career. A lot of the time he was overloading and throwing shots and people were shooting underneath because he throws his hooks very flat.
Yeah.
They're very perpendicular to the floor and they're quite easy. If you can time them, you can get under and shoot. And we saw it in a few fights. Now, the execution of that, you know, the bat speed, it seems to be that much faster and sharper. It doesn't look like he's winding up as much. Mm-hmm. He's still throwing with plenty of heat. And that left hook that hit Corey Anderson landed flush on the temple, and that was it. Game over.
Man, the way Corey fell, that was like a video game. You know what I mean? It looked like the UFC 2 where, like, the default where they just kind of spin a little bit or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Abby, what do you think? I mean, he got done with that fight, and he said, listen, man, I want the winner. You know what I mean? I want the winner of the title fight, Daniel Cormier, Anthony Rumble Johnson. It's happening in April. It's just, you know, a couple weeks out. He wants that winner. I mean... That to me seems a little strong, a little big up the path. But I mean, I guess you can't blame a guy for asking for it, right? I mean, what do you think? When you heard him making that call out, did you think, "Well played, Jimmy Manoa," or did you think, "Come on, player, that ain't gonna happen"?
I've been around Jimmy a bit. I've seen a lot of his fights. So I just think, from what I see with Jimmy, he's, especially in the last two occasions, so was OSP and now it was Corey, right? I mean, he's coming in with an air of confidence that he hasn't had in a while. He's just been, every time we've been around him and we've been, you know, he's always around at European shows when we've gone to All Stars. He's
either on him or a guest fighter or
he's always been the quiet one, you know. And today and this week he came in like, you know, this is my main event. Yeah. When we spoke to him earlier in the week, he was he seemed happy and like, you know, he's just like, he had this smirk on his face like he knows something that we don't. And that's the way he went into this fight, confident. I just felt Jimmy Mann was you know, firing on all cylinders, and he's just ready to go.
How about this? Because you make a great point that he's always seemed like the quiet one to mm-hmm. me. You know, didn't, and I don't know if it was just a, you know, proper British attitude, or it was just a, you know, a reserve guy or whatever. Here's the other one that he threw out tonight, right? How about when people asked him at the post fight press conference if he'd be interested in the John Jones fight, which that's pretty good. Dan Hardy, UFC commentator, had said it at the Q&A. He's like, I'd like to see him call out John Jones. Kind of does make some sense, because I would think, like, just thinking that you're going to get the title fight might be a little much, especially when John Jones is coming back, you know, this summer. But it was pressed for him at the press conference, and he did ultimately admit later, I mean, I'll take the fight if they give it to me, but he said, I don't want that fight. He's tainted. He took steroids. I respected him as a fighter, and now, like, he's put, you know, doubt on everything that he's done. That, to me, like,
that's pretty strong, right?
It was the first, dude, to me, that was like the strongest thing I've ever heard Jimmy Manoa say.
For real.
It took to me that it was like completely out of character. So what do you think? I mean, is this a maturation of Jimmy Manoa saying, like, I gotta speak up, you know?
This is me thinking that he believes in himself, and he's confident, and he can say what he wants. That's the kind of confidence I got from him at the press conference.
And probably means he's stuck fighting John Jones next now.
Yeah, I mean, him saying that he didn't want to fight John Jones, but he would, and the way he kind of dismissed fighting, you know, a possibility of fighting Jones was like, yeah, he's going to get John Jones next.
What did you take, Simon, of his call out David Haye as well? Like,
I could see it. Like, you know, like, if they're going to make Conor and Mayweather, I can see that that event having MMA fighters versus boxers.
No, they're not going to pay anybody. They're not going to pay anybody.
You know, those two,
between Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather, they're going to want to squeeze every last dollar out of that. I mean, you know how boxing pay-per-views work. Dude, it's like it's one fight and nobody else.
Yeah.
David Haye.
I know, but David Haye versus Jimmy Manoa?
David Haye's doing very well for himself. He's just had a very big fight.
So you're in for it.
I am.
I'm in for it as well.
So now every UFC fighter is going to call out a boxer now?
No, but we spot
call
we
out
asked
wrestlers
him this.
Too? Maybe give me The Undertaker. Give me worry about fighting MMA.
Yeah, but listen to this, right? Because we spoke to him in the week. And this is a guy who he trains with one of the top British middleweight boxers. Dillian White. He's one of his sparring partners. I asked him, I said, with everything that's going on, Roy Jones Jr. is angling to fight Anderson Silva. You know, it was something that they tried to push for a while back. Nothing happened. He's trying again. Of course, we all know about Conor and Floyd. I said, would that ever be something that interests you? And his answer was very interesting. He answered very much as if it was kind of almost like a wait and see kind of thing. Mm. I actually think he could transition quite well into boxing. He's got a good boxing style. He spars with boxers all the time. And he spars with some flipping good ones as well. I mean, Dillian White is legit. And to call out David Haye has just come off the back of a boxing fight with a guy called Tony Bellew. A fight which he lost. But he drew a huge amount of fans for that fight. His previous fight, he fought a guy that no one had heard of. No one had heard of him. I think it was some Australian guy. They brought him out. He was like the Australian champion, which doesn't mean much, really. So,
shots fired.
Thank you to our friends in Submission Radio for listening. Oh, no. But yeah, and they brought this guy over, and he filled the O2 arena. Wow. There was barely anyone on the undercard, and he filled the O2. Jimmy Manoa versus David Haye would sell out the O2.
Yeah.
Trust me.
Yep.
Trust me.
That's and what, I mean, like, John, you were like, hell no, no way. But maybe it's a thing that, like, you know, it's a British thing probably.
This is a boxing country. I know boxing is struggling in other parts of the world. This is the one country in the world where boxing is thriving.
Germany too, right?
Kind of, yeah. They're kind of losing their stars with the Klitschko's on the way.
We had this conversation earlier on in the week, like, when it comes to boxing, like, I get it. I respect the sport and the art form, but at the end of the day, in comparison to MMA, it feels like a handicapped sport. They can only use their hands, whereas in MMA, like.
But I guess the thing that concerns. So I mean, so you're saying you're down for this one matchup, right? And you guys are both English, and it makes sense to you because of all the things that are involved. They're, you know, English fighters and all that. So, but I mean, I'm just. Doesn't it scare you a little bit that, like, just like for instance, everybody's calling out Conor McGregor, like, no matter what weight class they're at. Hell, Anderson Silva's calling out Conor McGregor, right? I mean, doesn't it concern you a little bit that, like, now every time somebody wins, they're going to be like, I would also like to fight the 112-pound champion of the IBF 257. Like,
no, but that,
what?
There's no money involved there.
But here's the thing.
They're only
going
to call out the big names.
Right.
And that's what we're interested in.
We're in a new era now.
At the end of the day, if someone's talking about this sport that we love, mm-hmm. in the same breath as boxing, that's a good thing for our sport.
Certainly
right?
is over here. It might not be in America. Sense. I don't know. But over
like,
here.
We want. All right. We're in this bubble, but we want this bubble to burst and everyone to see it.
Right.
Yeah.
So this may be a way in.
The one thing I was going to say with this is the Conor McGregor Floyd Mayweather fight, and one of the problems I have with it, and I've always had with it, is that Conor is a world champion, and I think as a world champion you have a duty to defend your belt. We were talking before we went on air. Conor's an incredibly successful mixed martial artist. He's won 4 world championship belts, hasn't defended any of them, right?
So ridiculous.
Right? Facts.
Yeah, so really.
Facts. But so his duty really is to defend those belts. Now, Jimmy Manoa doesn't have that responsibility on his shoulders. Also, I think we're in a new era, John, where we've got free agency, we've got people potentially moving from promotion to promotion. Maybe boxing becomes part of that equation where guys start to compete across codes. And they maybe take a boxing fight here.
See, I think
a mixed martial arts fight here. I'm not necessarily saying it's a good thing for the sport.
It would be hard, though, right? Because the UFC would have to... Because the way it's set up now, the UFC is not their promoter, right? The UFC pays in their contract.
And it's just exclusive.
And that would be outside. So, I mean, what do you think, like... The UFC would have to get a fee or a cut of the purse?
They'll have to work it
out. They'll have to co-promote in some form, yeah.
In a way that's, you know, beneficial for everyone, you know? And... If people are going to want to do that, they're going to want a cut of that, and they'll find a way, right?
I think it'd be an easier.
It's a young. We're a very young sport still, so it can evolve. It's still evolving.
Yeah,
I think it'd be an easier thing to negotiate as well. I know the numbers wouldn't be as big, and I think that the promoter who would probably be involved over here, a promoter by the name of Eddie Hearn, actually David Hay self promotes. So if
really?
He's, yeah, if he self promotes. Then that makes it even easier. If the biggest boxing promoter in the UK, Eddie Hearn, got involved, then I still think it's doable because I think he has a certain level of respect for what the UFC do. He proclaims not to be a big fan of MMA, but he has a lot of what his events look like now take a lot of inspiration from what UFC events are packaged like. So he certainly knows what's going on in that respect. And I think it's a fight that if they decided that, okay, let's give it a go, and don't forget, IMG are looking for new and original ways to make money. Maybe the occasion... You can't make it a habit. It has to be the exception rather than the rule.
Yeah, it has to be... That's
but
what I was saying, like,
in this market, it actually makes a whole lot of sense. It'll be the biggest Jimmy Manoa fight you could make in the UK because you're not going to get a world championship fight over here, are we?
Mm-hmm. It's a good point there. I mean, it's a bigger fight than probably anything you can do, you know, other than a title fight.
It's back page newspaper news in the UK if that happens. Jeez. Trust me.
Definitely.
I guess times are changing. My newly 39-year-old ass is going to have to get used to some changing times, I guess.
Yeah, it does.
This guy's cut off already. It's 6 a.m. I'll cut you a little bit of slack.
Yeah.
All right, well, I tell you what. Let's take a quick break and so we can reset some things. My frosty beverage is low over here, and who knows what Abby Subban's doing over there. So we got to work all that out. In the meantime, while we do that, judge for yourself. Listen to poster boy Jimmy Manoa after a huge win and impressive performance in the main event of UFC Fight Night 107.
Back at the O2, main event. Didn't go your way first time round. You more than made up for it this time. How sweet was that? First round, clean knockout. Even you looked like you sort of pulled a face as you walked away. So it's like, that was a good one.
Yeah. It was great to deliver devastating KO in front of my hometown crowd in London. And very satisfying.
Talk to us about the call out of, first of all, of the world title and also of David Haye, because that's going to get you a lot of headlines in the next few days, I'm sure. Where is your mind at right now? If you were offered both those fights on a plate right now, which one are you taking?
I'll probably go for the UFC title fight, the winner out of DC and Rumble. But at the same time, why not have a fight with David Haye, two of the hardest hitters in London and everything, and I think that fight makes sense.
How satisfying is it to know that you've now pretty much bridged the gap from the pack to the contenders now? You're in that elite group at the very top of that light heavyweight division.
Listen, I've always thought I was in the elite group, but it was just a matter of getting the great performances put together, and I've done that twice in a row now, so... You know, it's time now. I believe my next fight will be for the title. And, you know, I can't wait. I've trained so hard over the years, and especially after my last fight, I went straight back into training camp. And, you know, I haven't really had any rest since my last fight. So, you know, it was great to finally get a clean knockout.
Simon kind of touched on the fact that you took a big step up tonight, man. I think really people really probably give you the respect now that maybe you felt you deserved. I just want to ask you how you felt tonight, the whole experience, because it seemed like from the moment you kind of were walking in, you were extremely comfortable, you know, soaking it all in, taking a little extra moment. How did this whole experience feel, and did it feel different than the last time you were in this headlining slot?
It didn't really feel that much different, but being in front of my home crowd, I knew I had to soak it in and use the crowd as energy as well, and... you know, I'm not gonna. Like I said back before, I'm not gonna feel that too many times in my career fighting in front of my home crowd and getting a knockout as well. So I soaked it all in and everything. But at the same time, I knew that I was the better elite fighter than him tonight. And you know, I knew I just had to take my time, and he would make the mistake, and I made him pay for it.
And Corey admitted that your takedown defense was better than he thought it was. I mean, you said yourself you're a knockout artist, but do you feel like maybe you answer some questions, or maybe people just don't give you the respect that you deserve for the other aspects of your game?
Listen, people can say what they want. At the end of the day, when we get in there, it's a fight. That's what I say to everyone. It's a fight when we get in there. It's not technical. It's not wrestling. It's not boxing. It's a mixed martial arts fight. So we knew what he was coming with. We knew he'd try and mix up striking with takedowns, and we worked tirelessly on takedown defense for this fight. But we do that anyways. You know, and I work with the best team in the world, All Stars, Nova Fulsa, Kettles Gym. I've got the best trainer, the best training camp and everything. And, you know, everything came together.
Jimmy, yesterday at the Fighter Q&A, Dan Hardy mentioned that if you won tonight, you should call out John Jones. John Jones obviously going to be returning for him from his suspension. There hasn't seemed to have been an answer on how to beat John Jones clinically inside the octagon. Do you think you possess that answer?
I'm not interested in John Jones. John Jones takes steroids and that. He's been banned for steroids and that. He's a great... Before, I was a big fan of John Jones. The things he's done in the octagon and everything, but he's been suspended for a year or something, and he's had issues before. He's a great fighter. I greatly respect him, but he's been done for steroids, and that taints everything that he's done. So, you know, I'm not really interested. When he comes back, I'll fight him. No problem, you know. But I'm focused on the belt right now, and that's going to be the winner out of DC and Rumble Johnson.
and for you after the last loss, it seems like there's been a real fire underneath you to go out there and prove it. And you've got two amazing finishes. What's the difference now? Why is it now that we're seeing a better Jim Emanuel than ever before?
Because I learned from my losses. I learned from my loss to Gustafsson. I learned from my loss to Ramble Johnson. I've made those things correct now and everything. And now I'm fighting the best in the world.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. Jimmy Manoa, the victorious Jimmy Manoa, setting up a boxing fight with David Haye. It's done. Simon Head and Abby Suman are reporting.
Beehive.
Agreements have been reached. No, I'm just kidding. All right. Let's talk about the co-main event. Man, how damn good did Gunnar Nelson look tonight? This guy, Gunnar Nelson, always has a good upside to him. I mean, he's just such an incredibly interesting guy. His demeanor is so unique. His game, his submission game is awesome, I love really good grapplers like that, you know, just those high-level grapplers. I know people love, you know, the knockouts, the stand-up wars, and I do too, man. I love watching two people go at it, you know what I mean? But when you have a craftsman on the ground like that, you got to love it. And he did look fantastic tonight. And, you know, Alan Jabon's a guy that I've had respect for. You know, saw him come up as an amateur, you know, I've watched his whole rise, and it's been a pleasure. And I know how talented he is, but Gunnar just absolutely dominated tonight. Simon, it's crazy because we're talking about UFC 194 not that long ago where Demi and Maya, you know, kind of dominated him. And here, man, he's looked fantastic in back-to-back wins. And, dude, I think this might have been one of the best fights of his career because not only did he get the win done by submission, but – I mean, he rocked Jabon. I mean, he could have had the knockout. I think he could have easily had the knockout and just decided, no, I'm going to throw him on the ground and choke him out instead.
I thought it was really interesting the way that you framed the question to him in the press conference. You were asking him the selection process that he went through when he's in there. He's a very cerebral fighter. And a lot of the time you see fighters and they seem to fight on instinct. You get the impression with Gunnar, he's just got all these little subroutines as they're taught, you know, in his head, and it's a case of, right, I'll choose this one to do this. People sleep on Gunnar Nelson striking, and he has got excellent, if slightly unorthodox, striking.
Definitely.
But there's no question he's got really crisp technique, heavy hands, and good feet. We don't always see that much of his feet. It tends to be punching based, but we, you know, he's got excellent karate based striking. And as you say, he could have finished with strikes, but he went, because he was almost on autopilot. You've actually said that in the interview, that he just went with what seemed like the most logical way of finishing the fight with what he saw, and that was his bread and butter, which is his jiu-jitsu.
It's funny because I did say, like, the selection process. I should have just, like, can you reveal some of your programming?
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like,
yeah.
Let's hear the code that you were operating at that particular moment, because he's a little bit of a robot at times. But you did get a little bit of personality out of him as well. You got him to talk about the fire. That was obviously kind of a fun point of conversation this week. You know, last night. You know, there's a fire. God damn, was that last night? Well, two
nights ago now.
At now, 6 a.m. in the morning. Yeah, but, you know, the fighters were all pushed out in the street and they had to deal with that. But you brought it up, and it was kind of funny because Coach John Kavanaugh had poked fun at him the night before on that video that we put together. And then he kind of poked fun at himself, too.
It was cool, wasn't it? I mean, that was really why I asked him. I thought we would either get another completely deadpan response, which would have been amusing enough. But he kind of joked. He was like, oh, man, I was really scared, all this. And it was kind of funny. He kind of sort of left his character a little bit. But that is actually the real gun. He's got quite a wicked sense of humour. But it's behind this stony facade. And when he's in front of the media, he tends to be very deadpan. But actually, if you listen to him sometimes, he's actually quite... He's got a bit of a sense of humour there.
He really does.
Just to peel back the layers.
Abby, what do you think about this guy, man? I heard somebody told me tonight, and I don't know if it's true or not, and I don't know if I should even say who it was. They were like, you know, they were trying to put together a fight with George Masvidal, and Masvidal turned it down, and that's how this fight came to be. And I'm like, no, I hadn't heard that. I don't know what you do with Gunnar, because I cannot see anybody in the division, like, wanting to fight him, because there's not, like, a lot of upside to it. It's so, like, dude is so good. Striking is good. Grappling is incredible. but doesn't have necessarily the ranking or the respect I think that maybe he deserves. And so, I'm struggling to find something that just leaps out at me that makes me think that's the fight, because I don't know what other fighters are going to look at and say that's a fight that makes sense to me.
Right. I didn't see the fight. I looked up every now and then, and I see him, like, you know, he was dominating, and then I saw his hand being raised. But it came across like a typical Gunnar Nelson fight where the guy was overwhelmed and suffocated, but it was Alan Joban he was fighting. Mm-hmm. It's a big step up. I don't know. With when it comes to Gunnar, the way I look at Gunnar is like he's a very dangerous grappler. He's like he's awesome in the sense that he can control the fight. He'll dictate the pace and everything. But I thought he was on a rise until he ran into Damian Maia, and then everyone was just like, maybe he's not on that level.
Yeah. I think everybody kind of wrote him off after that one.
Because before that, he was just like, "Oh, he's got the Conor rub, you know, he's Fedor-esque and stuff like that." But nah, I still think we haven't seen the best from him.
He said, "Man, he's evolving a little bit." And I guess we should probably clarify for you to say you didn't see the whole fight.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you're working in the back, it wasn't like you were just chilling. But sometimes when you're working
I was
in
just
the back
chilling in the back. No.
Yeah, you were.
Oh, so ridiculous. You know what's funny? By the way, I'm not always the greatest at picking up European accents, but he does have like a complete Irish accent now, right?
Yes, he's got an Irish twang to it.
I mean, of course, you know, he speaks English. He spends a lot of time in Ireland.
He's got that slow plodding Conor pace
as
well.
There's like, something there, right? Yeah, yeah. I was hearing him talk tonight, and I'm like, he sounds totally Irish.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen. He's a dangerous fighter. I'm struggling to find the matchup that I think really makes sense for him right now. I'm not sure. We'll have to turn it over to the young Mike Bond. He likes to put on Sean Shelby shoes.
Yeah, he'd do it.
He likes to. Sean Shelby shoes. And put those kind of matchups together. I'm not exactly sure.
Magny.
You like Magny?
I like Magny. I think Magny makes sense. He's ranked above him. I think stylistically it might offer something. I know they tried to do the Dong Hyun Kim fight in Belfast, and that fight didn't come to fruition. Maybe they revisit that again. But if you're looking to give him a push, I think Magny is a logical pick.
Makes some sense. And Magny is a guy. I know Magny wants the biggest fights possible, but he's also the kind of guy that's like, I'll fight anybody.
Another person that had a problem, that had trouble with the grappler, he ran into Damian Maia and his momentum stopped, right?
Sounds like a common thread here. You just run into Damian Maia and shit changes for you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, listen, fantastic performance. Alan Joban, man, he was so gutted. Again, like I said, you know, seen him since he was an amateur. He walked by press row and he was, you know, frustrated. He kind of caught eye contact with me or whatever. And he's like, I'm better than that. I'm better than that. You know, it's tough to see guys just you know, run into a rough night. You know, not to say like, oh, well, you know, he just didn't perform. You know, no, I mean, he did, dude. He just ran into a tough guy, but obviously very frustrated. I think, you know, it's funny because Joban, like, you kind of think of him as a young guy, but he's not a young guy.
Yeah.
You know, he got kind of a late start in his career, so it's not like he's got all the time in the world. And like, he's got years to develop. He doesn't. So it'll be interesting to see kind of where he goes from here. But this was just tough night against a stud.
Yeah.
Absolute stud. All right, well, listen, I did want to play a little bit of audio from Gunnar Nelson because, damn it, you just can't beat Gunnar Nelson. And, again, I thought he was pretty insightful tonight and even a little bit humorous, which who knew he had that side. Here's Gunnar Nelson.
Gunnar, congratulations on your win this evening. Might have been one of the best performances of your career. Just got to ask, how do you feel after putting on a display like that?
Feels great, man. The fight went well, went my way, obviously, and you know, it was a good first round as well, just getting a feel for it, and I'm actually enjoying spending a little bit more time in the octagon than maybe some of my previous fights. I feel like I learned more.
And the finish that you had was spectacular. You land the right hand, the kick lands. It looked like the knockout was there for the taking. What's going through your mind at that point? Obviously, we think of you as a gifted submission artist, but it looked like you could finish it. Instead, you basically pull him to the ground and finish him there. What's the thought process and the selection process as that's unfolding?
You know, at that point, there was a, it was just the most obvious opening for me. You know, it was just, I thought the way it went was just the most clinical, really. You know, he was, instead of running into him and throwing a bunch of shots to get the knockout, it was just, he was out. There was no need to give him a few more punches to the face. He's a pretty guy as well. He's a model, you know. There was no need. There's no need.
Very fair of you there. And I guess, what would you like to see next? Because very talented, not always talking about you with some of the, you know, the top names in the division, but I think you provide problems for anybody in the division. So, you know, kind of what do you see next for yourself? I know that you work with some people that are pretty good at asking for what they want. What do you feel like you want and need next?
What I'm looking at now is just get two more fights this year. Obviously, try to get some good opponents, some top-ranked opponents, preferably. Well, right now, my mind is just looking to get home, go home to my son, get back to the gym. As I said, like, that time spent in the octagon, there's a lot of things to that I can learn from there. There's a good few moments there, and just that time you spend there, the feel for being in there, in the energy, I feel like I learn a lot from that, you know, and I felt different this time in the cage that I felt in a long time or ever, you know. It's changing a little bit for me, and it's better, you know. It's better than it used to be.
Gunnar, how important was the loss to Rick Story in terms of your development as a mixed martial artist? That fight, it looked to me at least as if when you lost that fight, it was a case of running out of time to actually find the finish. And since then, we've seen a much more ruthless Gunnar Nelson. Is that something that you've paid particular attention to, and to push the pace a little bit more and maybe be a bit more prepared to really commit to the strikes when the opportunities arise?
Yeah, that's a good example of where I go into a bit of an autopilot mode and just don't really think. And then I watch the fight and I'm thinking, what the hell was I doing? You know what I mean? Like, not that taking anything from Rick Story. He's an amazing fighter, great fighter, very tough. But yeah, I did learn a lot from that fight. Maybe you know, when it comes to just like changing the pace a little bit of the fight, changing your, you know, you might even do the same moves, the exact same moves, but just do them differently. Do them from a different pace, different timing. You know, just watch your opponent a little bit and stalk him. You know.
And on a light note, we had a little bit of a incident last night at the Fighter Hotel. Everybody was evacuated with the fire alarm. We spoke to your coach, John Kavanagh, there's a bit of humour around how you might have reacted to such an incident. Tell us how it was for you and what your reaction was at the time.
I was just screaming scared, you know. It's crazy. No, we were actually literally about to close our eyes, and then this thing goes off, and we didn't know it was just in our room. Actually, one of my roommates farted really bad, and we were actually discussing if it was that, because it was fucking horrendous. Sorry for cursing, but we waited a while, actually. We were just thinking it would go off eventually, but the sound was really annoying, wasn't it? It was just... finally, I was just wearing my underwear about to go to sleep, and I kind of peek out, and I see, like, couple of gentlemen there as lost as I was, just kind of looking around, seeing what people were doing, and then eventually we smelled a little burn and we decided that was maybe a good idea to get the hell out of there.
So you said after you caught him you didn't want to hurt him anymore with the punches, but did it went through your mind that it would be better to have a submission than to have a knockout for your record, for example?
No, to be honest, I was just joking with the model thing and all that, but it didn't go through my mind that I didn't want to hurt him or it just kind of happened that way. I punched him. I could see he was out, and I just felt like this was the finish that was there, you know. Maybe it's just not as much in me to go and swing my arms and try to really, you know, hurt him, I guess you could say that, but just, there was no need, as I said, just grab him and, you know, put my hands around his neck and finish the job, you know. It was just clean.
So Gunnar Nelson, victorious in just absolutely incredible fashion. Again, I mean, you know, it's going to live on his record as a second-round submission win via guillotine choke, but you should always put that little asterisk next to it in your mind and know that that right hand came in, that high kick came in. I was worried for a second because, you know, Jovan was kind of bent over a little bit, and I was afraid that maybe his, you know, his hands were on the ground or, you know, like putting himself up like that when that kick came in because he was kind of falling over. And I was like, oh, no, don't be like an illegal kick. But, man, fantastic work there. All right, big fight, third way down the card. Marlon Vera picked up a third-round knockout win of Brad Pickett. And it was Brad Pickett's final fight. It was, man, it was emotional in there. I'm not going to lie, dude. Like, I was, like, wiping away a tear as he stepped in the cage. Dude, you know, he got the full kind of main event walkout, you know, the lights down, the, you know, you're starting out in the parking lot, walking all the way in or whatever. Arena was on their feet, man. They were giving them all the respect they deserve. Very, very, very loud, very cool in there. Of course, he had the newspaper with him that he was allowed to walk in with. They had all the messages of support that had been, you know, gathered for him by the USC staff, and they put that together for him. And, yeah, you contributed to it, Simon Head. I actually contributed as well. So, Abby, you got a little note on there as well?
Yeah.
Very cool, man. Very cool. So, yeah, I mean, I thought that was a cool little touch by the USC to put that together. And, dude, was fighting pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Was fighting pretty good. You know, I thought the first round was close, but I thought he edged it out. I thought the second round he looked fantastic. And then the third round came, and I think he slowed down a little bit. I think Marlon finally started to dial things in. I mean, let's not forget, Cheeto took this on short notice, had to fly across the Atlantic. And I thought that, you know, you could definitely feel a momentum shift. And then on top of that, I feel like Brad pressed potentially unnecessarily when he didn't need to in the third round. And I do wonder how much of that just had to be with, like, he wanted to put on a picket fight. You know what I mean?
That's just how he's wired.
Right?
That's just how he's wired. I mean, we were watching it in the back. It's kind of an amusing story. We were watching it in the back, and we watched the first round, and I think we're just getting ready for start the second round.
Mm-mm.
Was it the second round?
No, was it
the first round?
It was just like, let me let me get this before, because I want Simon to finish off on Brad Pickett, because Simon's quite good at articulating how he feels about Brad.
Being long-winded. And
I got a little edit to do. I just got a note from Kenny, so I just want to jump on that. And I know
he'll look at that. Cold coffee. Yeah. Hitting us up at 6 o'clock in the morning, asking you to do some work.
Yeah. And so
that was nice of him.
Yeah, we were in the back. And we all kind of stopped for this fight. We all kind of stopped. I stopped what I was doing, and I was settling for it. And we were just about to sit back, and someone said, oh, Arnold Allen's coming. And so we just turned around, and he was walking through the door, and the fight had just begun. And we were like, oh. So I stood up, and I looked at Arnold, and I go, Arnold, Brad's fight's just started. Do you want to watch it? And he was like, yeah, if that's all right. And he looked at the PR person. The PR person looked at me. He was like, yeah, it's okay. So we stood there for 15 minutes and watched the fight.
That's awesome. Well, you know, I think that just kind of echoes the sentiment that you know, we kind of all talked about on the show earlier this week that, you know, I saw a lot of people, especially kind of American fans, like, he's not a legend. He's not a legend. Come on. But I think you could show – or you can see, rather, to anybody here in the UK, like, what he meant in terms of this market. And for a young guy like Arnold Allen, you know, an up-and-coming stud who we'll talk about briefly in just a moment, picked up a huge win over Makwan Amirkhani, for him to want to come in, and it's supposed to be his moment in front of the media and his moment to kind of soak in his accomplishment and brag about himself a little bit and to him say, nah, actually, I'd prefer to just sit back and watch this fight, that means something.
Mm-hmm. It does, and he might not be a legend outside of the UK. I think we touched on this on mm-hmm. on the pre-event show. He's definitely a legend here, and the reception that he got clearly affected him as he went to the octagon. He was wiping tears away as he got in the cage. He was doing his best to soak it all in, and when he went in there, he produced probably the best two rounds we've seen from him in a long time.
Yeah.
I had him two rounds up. I think mm-hmm. a couple of the scorecards might have had him two rounds up.
Yeah, it was 1-1 on one card and 2-0 up on the other two.
And as he went into the third round, the main thing that I sort of took from watching him fight was he was being much, much more savvy with his wrestling. Whereas normally he would like to just stand in the pocket and throw.
Right.
He was mixing things up a lot more than we've seen of late. And I was thinking, he's fighting smart. He wants to make sure he wins this. And he used his wrestling quite a lot in that second round. Going into the third round, we were looking at it going, Vera's going to come at him now because he knows he's down on the cards. He's going to be berserker mm-hmm. mode now for him.
Right. Go for broke, right?
And he didn't go completely crazy, but he did push the pace noticeably. And the head movement that we saw from Pickett in the first round wasn't there in the third. Mm-hmm. He started to get picked apart, and the press room was packed predominantly with Brits. And it's hard not to root for the Brit, especially when it was his retirement fight on home ground. But it was a bit like watching a car crash in slow motion.
Yeah, because you start to see it unravel.
Because we were looking at him going, it's one of those fights where you're watching the action, then you look at the clock. You're watching the action, then you look at the clock. And that's what it was like. It's like, okay, he's got 2 minutes to, you know, he's got 3 minutes to go. He's got 2.5 minutes to go. He's done half a round. And I'm thinking, okay, Brad, time for a takedown now.
Yep.
2 minutes to go. Definitely time for a takedown now, Brad. Minute and a half to go. Take him down now, Brad. Fight's over. And then it gets to a minute and pow, head kick. Spectacular head kick. Yep. And all the credit in the world to Marlon Vera for producing that in the third round of a fight, coming in on short notice, having to travel halfway across the world to do it. On enemy territory, he had everything against him in this fight. And he produces that, having lost two rounds. All credit to him. But it was like they put a pin in the balloon in the press room. Everyone was like, oh.
Yeah.
And it was, honestly, I was genuinely upset for about an hour and a half after that. And it was just because it felt like he was getting sort of the perfect send-off,
mm-hmm.
the fairy tale finish, and it just didn't happen. And real life isn't a fairy tale, and that's what we saw. Brad in the post-fight press conference, I was slightly surprised that we saw him because he told us in the lead-up to the fight that he would be an emotional wreck after the fight. Mm-hmm. I thought he was in remarkable spirits when he came to the press conference. He was having a bit of a laugh and a joke. He was being incredibly positive, had some really nice things to say about Marlon Vera, saying how pleased he was for Marlon that he got the extra money to help his family and the fact he's got a daughter who's been ill. It just made you feel even more proud that he's represented our country in MMA. And I hate clapping at press conferences. Hate it. I started that round of applause.
I was wondering if I should call you out or not.
I still did not clap. Like, I learned my lesson early.
Yeah.
Early. There's
one exception, and that's a retirement. I think if they've put the service in, I think they deserve it.
You know what? No, it's funny that you say that because I've teetered on that as well. I'm not going to lie about that because I do agree. I hate the, you know, attaboy, I hate that.
Yeah,
I think that's a fair discussion to have. Like, you know, and I saw that you started. It was kind of funny because I was like, wow, I'm kind of surprised Simon did that. Because I've been in the room for retirements, but there's been moments where, like, I feel like I want to. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But I stop myself. But I wonder if I'm like, okay, listen, I feel pretty confident about my morals and the way I handle myself and all that. So if I feel an urge to clap, it just as a sign of respect, you know what I mean? Like, let me give you one last thank you. You know, we've how many countless interviews have you done for me? How much, you know, how much have we worked together? I mean, essentially, like, after you interview a guy 30 times and go to all these fights, I mean, it's not going to call it a coworker, but you do kind of have a working type relationship.
It's a working relationship.
It is, you know what I mean? And yeah, so it's kind of funny. I think it's kind of an interesting discussion topic because I agree. I cannot stand it when I see people like jump up and
it
this.
Does at does one my point, head at one point, I thought it was MMA media snobbery, but after it was explained to me,
right.
Like,
yeah,
you're there to cover the sport. You're not there to celebrate with them.
Right.
You're there to cover the sport. As I started to work more in the industry, I understood it. I started to understand it. But, you know, there's been occasions where I just want to clap, you know, or you get goose pimples.
It's unique because you've grown up. I mean, you're trained to be a videographer. You're not trained to be a journalist. You know what I mean? And you've been kind of learning that kind of stuff. So it is. But I do feel like as a guy's final send-off, if he's walking out of the room for the last time, you know, I mean, you'll probably see him again, but not in that type of fashion. Mm-hmm. It's kind of an interesting discussion.
I can give you a comparison because I was very fortunate. I was the only Brit in Englewood when Michael Bisping won the world title.
It just sounds funny. It sounds like
an album title, doesn't it?
Man in Englewood.
Yeah, it's Englewood, not Englewood, isn't it? But yeah, I was the only Brit there when Michael Bisping became the first British fighter to win a UFC world title. Didn't clap at press conference. You don't do that.
Exactly.
Right? Now, the reason why I did it, and I think the overriding thing, everything you said is spot on. Everything that he's given to the sport, everything he's given to us, the respect we've got for him, to think that the last interaction that I, as a reporter, with him as an active fighter, or us as a group of journalists with him as an active fighter, is for him to walk off a stage to complete silence, did not seem right to me. Mm. And you know, I'm sure some people will disagree with me.
But
you don't cheerlead from press row. You don't cheerlead in a press conference. Mm-hmm. You're there to do a job. But at that point, Brad Pickett's job had finished.
It's a good point.
What if we made it a point to, like, in situations like that, we had, like, some kind of agreement where we just all got up from our seats and went and shook his hand?
Yeah.
Everybody makes a move. No clapping, so it's fair. It's obvious that we're not being fans.
Yeah.
Shook his hand.
But we set some kind of precedent where the tradition is on those types of nights, everybody sets their computer down, their camera down, their recorder down. They get up and they walk. Because it is. Like, it seems weird to just let the guy walk off like you're just the next.
Because he would have just got off the stage and out the door.
You're the because you're right. No, though. Saying it like that is true. Like, that would be weird. You know what I mean? Like, just to walk out to silence. Mm. But I, like, struggled. Like, you started clapping and everybody started clapping, as deservedly so. And I was like. You know what I mean?
See, even I didn't sort of give it. I was sort of clapping sort of with my hands down like that.
Yeah.
And yeah, you were.
Yeah.
But you're a big fan of the hands down clap, I heard.
I got some cream. It's cleaned up. It's all good.
So maybe that would be a nice touch. Like, we could try to start some tradition. We're like,
something.
We're like, hey, listen, media, make sure that, like, when it gets done, if you want, you're not required to.
No.
But if you want to show your appreciation, customarily, we'll all jump up, walk to the side, shake his hand.
It makes a lot of sense. And, you know, like, sometimes you just want to, like, you know, like you said, his job's done. He's paid his dues. We've covered his fights, and it's gonna stop now. That relationship has ended.
Yeah,
let's thank him for it with a handshake.
That's a great way to
with a handshake. That's not the way you look. Like,
that's a great way to put it, though, man. Like I said, that relationship has ended. We'll start a new one going on to the next phase of their career, or whatever. Yeah. It's interesting, man. Good points all the way around. All right, well, listen, take nothing away from Chito Vera. Came in. Performed in difficult circumstances, did well, and came over and called me out while we were at the host hotel. Pretty funny.
What did he call you? I heard something.
So what happened was he walked by and kind of made eye contact real quick while we were all working. So we left the arena because the fine folks at the O2 decided that about 4 minutes after the press conference is over, we just all need to get the F out.
Yeah.
Turn the lights off on us at one point. Can we just say that?
Yeah.
Seriously, we're working in the press room, and they turn the lights out on us. F you. All right. So we went back to the host hotel because there was better internet than there is here at our Airbnb apartment. Got some work done from there. And yes, the sun is up, by the way. We're closing in on 7 a.m. Went over there to work, and Chito Vera happened to walk by and kind of make eye contact, gave a little head nod. And we're like, hey, congratulations. And he basically came over and was like, oh, you think I did good? Yeah, I was going to talk shit to you today. I wasn't going to talk to you at all.
He said it with a big grin on his face.
He was laughing the whole time. Basically, you know, if you go back to Phoenix earlier this year, Chito Vera had accepted to fight Jimmy Rivera on short notice. Jimmy Rivera then changed his mind, said, no, I'm not taking that fight. And I got involved in like some because I had found out what happened and verified, because it was like the report was, you know, it was announced and then it wasn't announced. So people were like, what's going on? So I got the truth out of everything, kind of made some quotes. And Jimmy Rivera kind of talked to me a little bit on Twitter and then, you know, got involved with fans. And the thing was, I did think Jimmy was kind of in the wrong. Like, you accepted the fight and then the next day you're like, nah, I changed my mind. I'm not accepting the fight. Like, bro, dude, you said you'd take the fight. So I thought Jimmy was wrong. That said, I also understand what Jimmy's saying. Like, Maybe I kind of rushed into this decision. Like, I mean, look at where I'm at. Look at the win streak I put together. Nothing against you, Chito, but I gained nothing by beating you. And that's fair, dude. He's coming off a win over Uriah Faber. Mm-hmm, you know what I mean? Like, come on. He's in a great spot. So I kind of – it's one of those situations where you're like, you understand both perspectives. You know what I mean? You're like, I get where this dude's coming from, and I get where that dude's coming from. But I guess somewhere along the line, I got in some discussions with fans, and I think I just responded to somebody's, like, quote with like an LOL, but I guess he saw it, and I didn't direct it at him. I just
thought the comment was funny.
I just thought the comment was funny.
It could have been anyone. Simon on the floor.
Cheeto was pissed off. He didn't like that right, so much. Right, he was like, right. I was going to not answer your questions, and I hate you.
Wow. But then imagine he did that at a press conference.
Then he was like, I'm just joking. Okay. He's like, no, I'm just kind of having fun, but seriously, don't ever talk shit about me again. So it was pretty good, but big win for him, man. As you said, he's got an incredible backstory with you know, his situation as a father, and
I totally
much
respect how he didn't play the heel this week. He didn't play the heel. He didn't embrace it. He was a gentleman throughout the whole week.
Yep.
And we walked up to him expecting him to be like, yeah, I'm going to spoil the party and stuff. And he was just so nice. I just walked away from it going, oh.
Yeah,
he's
right?
He's a nice guy.
I know. Here's the guy. It's so crazy to be like, yes, I want to come in here and beat this legend, but he is a legend. And I respect the hell out of him. And, man, just props all the way around. He did a great thing. So, all right, well, listen, can't let Brad Pickett walk away for the final time without hearing a few minutes of what he had to say before Simon Head fucked it up by clapping.
That's me clapping, by the way.
Yeah, you are.
Sounding like that.
All right, I am going to grab another round of Frosty Beverages, and while I do that, let's listen to One Punch, the last time we'll see him on the dais as a fighter.
Okay, Brad, it's the press conference I'm sure you've been thinking about for a little while now. Yeah. It didn't go your way. You were 1 minute away, potentially, from winning that comeback fight, and it just didn't quite go your way for you. What are the overriding emotions now you know that you've laid your hat down in the octagon and walked away from that cage for the final time?
It just shows, basically, I made the right decision before going into this fight. I was winning the fight for 14 minutes, and then I got a head kick where, to be honest, the younger me would have chewed that up and just carried on going, you know. But, you know, so definitely, it's definitely the right decision. Obviously, it's not the fairy tale ending that myself and probably everybody else had wanted. I think everyone in there was rooting for me to win, apart from Marlon and his corner, you know. So, but I'm happy for him, you know. He gets to feed these kids, and yeah.
Talk to us about the walkout, because it's a little bit special. Your walkout is always special to the British fans, but we could see on the screens back here that it was, you were trying to take it in, but also it looked like emotion was just getting the better of you as you made it to the cage there.
Yeah, this whole week has been just crazy emotion. You know, like, whatever I had throughout my career, tenfold. You know, it's been really, the support I've got from the press, the fans, the staff is just been mind-blowing, you know, and I'm forever grateful for this sport and the UFC to give me a platform to, you know. When I first started fighting, I fought in Portsmouth Pier for, like, I didn't even get paid. I got a free table for my friends to watch me fight, you know. I never thought in a million years, won this sport, would be where it is today? Well, actually, I did. I knew the sport would be great, but I didn't think in my career or even my lifetime that we'd be where we are today with the sport. It's been amazing, and it's been an absolute roller coaster, you know, for me and my fans. You know, it's not easy being a picket supporter, I tell you.
And as you walk away from the sport from a competition standpoint, what will be the abiding memories that you take? And when you bring up your young family and you start to tell tales of when Dad used to step in the octagon and fight, what will be those standout moments that you look back on with particular pride?
Well, just the way I fight, like I did tonight. I go out on my shield, you know. I could have played it really safe in that third round. I knew I won the first two rounds. I could have just tried to get a takedown and lay on top of him. But, you know, like I always do, you know, I live by the sword, die by the sword. And you know, yeah, I did do that for the fans. And you know, not anymore, but but yeah.
Pickett, just talk a little bit. You said how emotional the run-up to this fight was for you. You shared your time at ATT with some of the new wave of British fighters. Just talk about, you know, what that experience was like and how emotional was it for you to say goodbye to the guys at ATT?
It's emotional for me to say goodbye to just the sport in general. You know, I love this sport. It's helped me provide for my family for many years. But I've left the sport in a really, really good spot. You just saw tonight some great young talent, Arnold Allen, you know, and Mark Diakasi, you know, two studs, you know, and Jimmy Manawa tonight, you know, headlining. And when the UK MMA scene is in a great place, and, you know, and if I've been some sort of part of it throughout my career, I'm happy, you know.
Brad, you were up two rounds on two of the judges' scorecards, but it did seem like in the third you pressed. You pressed forward. It didn't pay off, but I wonder, you know, in hindsight, do you wish you would have maybe played it a little differently, or is it almost like a source of pride that, you know, even being up two rounds to none, you pushed?
It's me. It's my fighting style. I live by the sword, die by the sword. And I say I'll fight for the fans, you know. So I could have just maybe – I didn't have trouble taking him down when I wanted for a takedown. I could have just took him down and laid on him and make it boring. But, you know, that for me, I wanted to be in a typical Brad Pickett fight. And a typical Brad Pickett fight would have been me get up from that and carry on fighting, you know. But unfortunately, obviously, my age didn't let me get up as quick as I could. You know, I said to the referee before the fight, let me go stiff, you know. I felt I was okay a little bit, but obviously I have to look at it back. You know, I love Guam Warman, so I know he's got a job to do, and you know, I got a loving son, so I want to make sure I can still speak to him, you know.
Very nice. And I wonder, you know, you've gotten a lot of praise this week for how you handled yourself and, you know, announcing your retirement, getting to do it at home, just the way you handled the whole process. But you had a chance a year ago to walk out on a win. I wonder, is there any lesson you take out of that? I mean, is there a difference at the end of the day whether you walk out on a win or a loss?
I think the outcome of tonight didn't really matter. You know, I made my decision before. It would have been a great fairy tale ending for me to walk out on a win. But you could tell this is real life. It's not fairy tales, you know. So you have to be really smart when you're going in, you know. I think last year when I fought and I nearly... I always say I wasn't in the sport just to make up numbers. And back then, if I'd have lost, I would have retired. But you saw the relief in my face when I won. I'm like, holy crap. I can stay in the sport now and like, you know, like stay on this roller coaster. But tonight, like I say, win, lose, draw, whatever, I was content. I was ready. I'm done. I made my mind up, and I was really comfortable with my decision, you know. So unfortunately, it didn't go my way tonight, but, you know, Every cloud has a silver lining. I'm too nice, I think. You know, I was thinking, I'm happy for him, you know, because I know he's got a daughter who wasn't very well and stuff like that. So at least he gets a bit more money to feed his daughter. I'm just too nice thinking about other people, but you know, I'm happy for him.
Welcome back to the Mate Roadshow. That was Brad Pickett. I think we'll be hearing from him again, just not as a fighter. Sorry, it's getting a little 7 a.m. here.
Arnold Allen did pick up a split decision win over Makwan Amirkhani. Fun fight, man. This was really a fun fight, dude. The exchanges that these two had in the grappling and the transitions was a lot of fun. I gotta say, I hard to call it a robbery. I do think two scores of 30-27 shocked me. I thought that was bizarre to say the least. But I actually scored this fight from Makwan Amirkhani, and I won't call it a robbery because, man, I was just razor thin on some of the rounds. But I don't know, man. 30-27 seemed a little bit wrong to me. What did you guys take out of it? You know, Abby, I know you were, I don't want to say like buddies with Makwan Amirkhani, but I mean, we met him early on in his career, and you guys have done several interviews together. You've done some stuff for us at MMA Junkie and worked with him, and I know you have a decent relationship with him. I did think, you know, some of his striking, I like some of the techniques he was throwing in there tonight. I did think he gassed a little bit early. I did think he looked a little bit tired. And I did think, you know, Arnold Allen showed that he's gritty as hell. But I mean, what did you think about kind of the scoring of this fight and just what it means for Makwan Amirkhani going forward? Because this is a guy we talked about beforehand that we think has star quality, but is kind of a little mercurial and tough to read sometimes. So he kind of painted himself into a corner by saying he didn't want to fight again unless they went to Finland, and
they're not going to Finland.
I don't know if I don't. Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't a good night for Finland, we'll just say that.
Yeah,
right. When I watch, I stopped for this fight as well. I said I stopped, the only fight I stopped for was the Brad Pickett one, but I also stopped for this fight. I've got a good relationship with Makwan. Like you said, we've done, you know, various interviews and so on, and over time I'm not going to say we're best friends, but we've got a relationship there. I was excited to see this fight. From what I could see, his striking's come a long way. His counter striking.
Dude, he had a little check hook that was working,
man.
It looked nice.
He's been picking up a few things at SBG. But, yeah, you could see it was razor thin. It was super close. And every time I was editing something at the time, but I was watching this fight, and I could see Makwan. I thought Makwan took it too. I did. The only thing that could have swayed the judges, what I thought could have swayed the judges, was the last transition at the end.
Yeah.
Makwan, I think Arnold had his back, right?
Yeah.
And that's the only thing that I thought could sway it, but I was pretty confident Makwan got the win.
Close fight, it was, and I did score it that way as well. I still think there's some upside to him. Maybe he's still a little bit of a development process. Simon, I'll ask you, Arnold Allen now kind of takes the baton a little bit, right? I mean, we kind of said going into this, interesting that they take two young, you know, in their careers at least, you know, prospects developing, Arnold Allen, of course, being incredibly young. But were you surprised at all by what Arnold Allen showed tonight? Do you feel like he's the real deal? Is he a blue-chip prospect? Is the jury still out? What do you think?
I think it's far too early to tell. I think he's only 23 years of age. He's had 13 pro fights, 3 in the UFC, and I still don't think we've quite really scratched the surface of what he's capable of. I mean, a fighter's prime is normally in their early 30s, late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah, 28 to 32, 33.
Yeah, I would say so. So he's got another 5 years before he gets there. Five years in MMA is an absolute lifetime when it comes to what you can learn in your development and evolution as an athlete. I thought he showed an awful amount of composure in that fight. I was sort of watching it on and off because I was producing stuff backstage as well. But a lot of what I saw at a fight was Arnold having to fend off some pretty strong submission attack from Makwan. And what I did see and what I did take from that was he's composed.
Yeah,
He's obviously been put in those positions a lot in his training camps up there at TriStar in Montreal.
Yeah, he's been put through the ringer, right?
Yeah, he didn't. You see some fighters, they end up in a submission predicament and they panic.
Yeah.
And the minute they panic, the fight's over. He didn't do that. He was calm. He didn't try anything outlandish. He just knew what he needed to do to keep the fight alive. And did a good job. Showed some good stuff of his own. I thought it was a close fight. I can't say I can give a definitive score. of what I saw, I thought Makwan had the advantage in most of the exchanges I was watching. But in terms of going forward, I think he needs a slow build. In the UFC, that's sometimes difficult to achieve. But in the case of a prospect who is as young as this, he needs a steady build. And they don't want to be throwing him to the wolves so early, especially in the weight class that he's in.
Oh, yeah. There's still plenty of fights that you can make out there that don't rush him along. I agree. I still feel like there's things that we need to learn about Arnold, but I think we saw some bright things. And the thing about Makwan is, I feel like, you know, part of like his aura is the fact that he does have that I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but that demeanor that he has, where he's just kind of like kind of ho hum into it or not or whatever, you know. But I feel like that translates into his overall body vibe sometimes and just kind of costs him a little bit. You know, I feel like there's definitely some athletic prowess there, but every now and then it's just like he's trying to rely on his natural abilities too much and not the aggression. I don't know. I still feel like there's something there.
Yeah, I'm still very high on Makwan, but I'm also very high on Arnold there.
Tonight. All right, yeah. Let's talk about the final preliminary card. Listen, Joseph Duffy. Guy that I think we know what we got. Dude looked amazing tonight, man. Rezmadadi, of course, we know about his, some of the things that he's been alleged to involved with.
I completely missed this fight.
Oh, you didn't see it? Oh, well, fair enough. Well, Joseph Duffy, when you go back to watch it on UFC Fight Pass, you will see that, man, Joseph Duffy looked, I mean, on point. I can't even praise him. Dude, he was so calm and collected as he was, you know, his jab was so fast, his stand-up was perfect. He was just clicking on all cylinders tonight. Mm-hmm. I can't say enough about Joseph Duffy. I mean, 30-27 all the way around, could have made a case for a couple of 10-8s in there. I will say this, Rezmadadi, at one point during the fight, is literally like taking two hands and wiping blood off of his face. I mean, it is so pouring down, and he's literally taking both hands and wiping it off so he can continue fighting. I'm like, beast, dude. I mean, I love Reza for what he brings to the table. There was a reason Joe Duffy was the biggest favorite on this card. He performed like he was. Credit to Madotti, because he's a tough son of a bitch, man. He will go in there and do it. But Duffy just looked phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Reza Madadi is harder than a coffin nail. He's tough. He's tough, and he got pieced up through that mm-hmm. fight. Duffy was just picking his shots. I thought Duffy showed him a lot of respect because he didn't go gung-ho for a finish. Mm-hmm. You were watching the fight in the third round and thought, there's a finish there if you want it, Joe. Mm-hmm. But I think he was... Maybe the contract situation was something that might have been weighing on his mind. Don't take too many unnecessary risks. He won the fight by decision, clearly by decision. And he looked great. It was a striking masterclass. He looked superb. Masterclass, as I said.
Masterclass. Hashtag masterclass.
Hashtag masterclass. And, if he doesn't get signed up and hooked up by the UFC with a decent enough contract, I think it would be a travesty. I think it would be a waste.
I got to think he'll get a decent offer. I mean, we'll see. You know, they've obviously shown a penchant as of late. They're not going to overpay. They'll try to pay. But, man, he looks so good. Like, just his presence of range and his presence of, I mean, like you said, patient, picking his shots, but staying in the pocket. You know, not one of those things where he's standing out of range. No, he's in range, but he just knows exactly how far he has to lean back. It's the finer points of boxing that we don't always see in mixed martial artists, but of course he did that boxing career, and you could see it. You know, he doesn't flinch or blink when punches come his way. He's used to seeing it. He just dodges them, creates the angles. I mean, it was very much a boxing performance tonight, and I'm just surprised he didn't call it, David.
Yeah, his punching technique is so crisp. He's so crisp. But one thing I would mention with regard to the contract negotiations, and it's something that probably hasn't been spoken about that much, Ireland has a superstar on their hands in Conor McGregor. He ain't ever fighting in Ireland again for the UFC. Let's be honest here.
Good point.
That's not happening.
I like where you're going with this.
Who's the next guy?
I like where you're going
with
that.
The next guy is Joe Duffy. He's
Joe Duffy will sell out. What is it? Is it still the Three Arena?
Three Arena. Well,
is it still the Three Arena?
It is the Three Arena at the moment. Yeah, and
it was O2 for a while. Then three.
It was originally called the Point. It was originally called the Point.
The One Point, and then it was the O2, and then the Three Arena.
Let's see what you've done there.
The Four Leaf Clover next. The Five and Dime. Six Piece. The Lucky Seven. I don't
I ate that list. I ate it. But he was, of course, originally scheduled to headline at the Three Arena just about 18 months or so ago against Dustin Poirier. Suffered that flash knockout in sparring. I think it was probably his last sparring session before fight week, and it ruled him off the card. If they were looking to go back to Ireland again and put a card on, they need somebody who's going to pull in that local fan base, because the Irish really support their own. There is nobody better on the UFC roster right now than Joe Duffy. Added to that, he's a damn good lightweight, and he's good to watch. You know, he might have won by decision, but that was a fun fight to watch. And to watch a craftsman at work like that, you can go away and say, I watched a really, really superb elite level athlete, you know,
spectacular,
showing his
stuff. It's funny because, you know, we talked about it earlier in the week, but he shied away so much from being the guy that beat Conor McGregor, even though Dana wanted him because he was the guy that beat Conor McGregor. He doesn't want to be that guy, but now they're back in the same weight class. That guy's the UFC champ in your division.
Dan mentioning it in commentary.
Did he really?
He said, I'd still love to see Joe Duffy fight Conor McGregor one day.
Right? Oh, man.
That fight is 1,001,000 miles away, my friend. That fight is not happening.
Maybe Duffy can take on Triple G or something, and then they'll figure something out. All right. Francis Marbajoso picked up a win over Darren Stewart. It was funny because this was obvious a grudge match, man. We saw the way they interacted with each other, the weigh-ins. Just didn't really pan out that way. The fight was a little bit lackluster. It was a little bit disappointing. And this was really the only slow part of the show. I mean, the thing started off with a bang. It was this two little fight stretch here, then Timothy Johnson beating Daniel Omelianchuk by split decision. Timothy Johnson, nice a guy as you'll ever meet, tough as they come, fantastic mustache.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, dude, you just can't beat it. But yeah, I will say this little stretch of the show was where you're like, all right, guys, we need something to get back. But on a card that a lot of people were pooping on, it wasn't too bad. Leon Edwards did pick up a unanimous decision win over Vicente Luque. We were all hyped about this fight coming in, man. Two young prospects. And take nothing away from Leon Edwards. Hard-fought fight. I mean, he proved some things. With some of his grappling techniques and some of his transitions and some of his reversals and his strike, I honestly thought he would have been fine if he'd have just kept the fight standing. I thought he was doing well there. He proved a lot of things. Just this fight just didn't quite pan out to be as exciting as I thought it would be.
I think what Leon was doing, he knew this was a dangerous fight, and he told us backstage in the scrums that he was very, very aware of Luque's punch power. He'd won his last two fights going into this by clean knockout. And he didn't want to take unnecessary risks. He wanted to make sure he got the win. And the other thing that he wanted to do was show people that he wasn't a one-trick pony. Mm. And that he's got the full arsenal of tools in his toolkit, you know. And we talked about it before. He's British trained. Mm-hmm. And he's proven to the world that British fighters can actually be well-rounded. And he even said in the press conference, he wants fighters who come in against him to not have this game plan that thinks, he's English, we'll take him down, he can't wrestle. Because he can. He's actually quite handy at it.
It's interesting.
And he showed against Vicente Luque there, I totally agree with you. I thought he was having the better of the stand-up exchanges. But he was mixing things up. Just when it looked like Luque was going to start throwing some stuff, he'd change it up, hit the takedown. And it was just, I thought it was almost Edwards showcasing everything in his toolkit. He was like, I'm more than just a striker. I could take you down.
It was. You know? And I guess I can respect it a lot. I thought he was having a lot of success when he would back up. And the crowd was booing, so it was obvious. I know he was getting the feedback that he, you know, crowd wasn't loving it. Mm. Before Joe Duffy came in and put on, like you said, a striking masterclass, like I thought this was fantastic. You kind of back up, get a range, dig to the body. I mean, creating angles. I thought he looked good on the feet. So I don't know. I can respect, I guess, what he wanted to do. I guess I had higher hopes for this fight, but I don't want to take anything away from Leon Edwards because this dude is putting together a nice little run now. Here's a guy that Abby could be. A flag bearer of English MMA, like the least, the most unheralded, the least heralded guy that probably deserves some respect now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. But I still want to see the next challenge for him.
Yeah.
Who do you think?
Not Cowboy.
No. I don't think he's... I think Cowboy's a massive step up.
Right.
I think that's a massive step up. I mean, where is Leon sitting in the rankings? He isn't. He's not ranked.
Yeah.
Right? So we want to get him in that realm. So who's tinkering around the top?
Santiago Ponzinibbio might be interesting. He's an all-action fighter. He makes you fight for 15 minutes.
I like that.
That would be...
I like that.
He would give Leon some serious pressure, and we would have to see him adapt. He'd probably have to fight off the back foot to some degree. I think that would be a serious test for him. You look at other people sort of at the bottom half of that world's weight ranking, is Ryan LaFleur might be interesting. He's fought Kamaru Usman before and lost to him.
I mean, if he beat
Tariq Saffredine, if you wanted to really push him.
Saffredine? Stylistically, I think that would look good. A solid, respected welterweight. Welterweight. Tariq Saffredine.
Tariq Saffredine would be dope. All right, well, speaking of all action fighters.
Yeah.
Mark Diakite. This dude, I mean, he's been hyped, right? I mean, it's not like we're breaking news. Like, hey, man, you might want to watch this kid. He's hyped. I mean, everybody's loving this guy, right? And you know, his first couple of outings, you know, a little bit up and down. But when he's up, he's up. And this fight, I thought this was incredible. I mean, this to me was a coming out party in the fact that, you know, you come in, you gotta get your feet set a little bit. But when you could be featured in Fight Week all week, and I remember, you know, we were setting up the schedule, as we always do at MMA Junkie. You know, Simon, you and I were talking. I'm like, hey, can you work with the OCPR? Find out, you know, media day, who they're gonna have, you know, whatever. And it was funny because they were like, well, we're gonna end up having the top five fights available, plus Mark Diakite, because we get so many interview requests for him. I'm like, cool, well, we'll at least be able to talk to him, whatever. I mean, that just goes to show the amount of popularity here in England that he has. You know, he's kind of buried down on the prelims a little bit, but everybody wants to talk to him, so they bring in a media day. He came in, told you guys, I'm going to win this thing by first round spinning high kick. And damn it if he didn't try to go out there and win the thing by first round spinning high kick, right? I mean, I thought that was just some braggadocio on his part, but he came out there, and the athleticism that he showed to come out and throw those techniques was incredible. And then, of course, just the cracking shot that saw Teemu Pakkalan kind of just fall like a – just this, the delayed reaction on the fall of the floor, it was spectacular.
Yeah, it was like he's felling a great big Finnish pine tree, and down he went – For those of you who are familiar with Conor McGregor's past work, it had shades of the knockout of Ivan Butchinger that actually got McGregor the lightweight Cage Warriors title and eventually got him his spot in the UFC. There were similarities there. This was more spectacular, I think. But it was at it straight from the start. The one thing he didn't mention there, he did all of this in 30 seconds. This 30 seconds, he hit him with a two-touch spinning head, spinning back kick to the head, which connected, not flush, but connected.
Connected.
He then hit
almost
him
had it.
Spinning back kick to the body, then another two-touch spinning back kick to the sternum, at which point Pakkalan thought, better close the distance a bit.
Yeah.
At that point, wallop. Huge punch, down he goes, and the best thing about it for me was... He didn't chase more punches. He knew he'd knocked him out, and he knew the aesthetic was going to be good. He hit him and stood, because this guy just... Someone tweeted me and said, this is the slowest I've ever seen a man fall over. He went down in installments, didn't he? He's like, pomp, down he went. Amazing knockout. Breakdancing celebration, which is becoming a trademark of his. And he was... When he came backstage and talked to us, Abby, he was calling out the reporters, wasn't he? He was like, I told you. You better start listening.
Yeah, what did I tell you? I told you, yeah. No, I don't care. I'll take on anyone. What did I tell you? Oh, you want to hear something from me, don't you, Simon? You want to hear something from me? He's awesome.
I love it, man. 24 years old, and he's embracing the media like that. And, interesting. You know, he said he wants spots on the European cards.
Yeah.
Not, I guess maybe the patient move, not trying to rush over to Vegas yet, get rushed.
Yeah. Oh, he's smart. He said that he feels comfortable fighting. Obviously, it's like, you know, less travel and it's expensive to take your coaches over and stuff like that. So, yeah. He said he wants to fight three times this year, right?
Yeah.
All right, well, Simon, I don't want to steal your thunder, but we talked about it off air, and you made a suggestion. You made a suggestion, and I will let you roll that out now for his next fight, because he said, I want to fight in Sweden, and if you're a Swedish that wants in here and you want to say you're a prospect, you better get through me. And you, to that, you answer,
Mr. David Tamer.
I love it.
And then I said, you better bring your underwear because I'm going to.
David Tamer versus Mark Diakese has just got fireworks from the minute the pair of them arrive at the fighter hotel. The stare downs, because Diakese got like a little bit testy in the stare downs as well, slapping Pakalan's hand away when he offered
it. Well, Timo's such a big trash talker, and obviously always was trying to intimidate you. You know those dirty looks he gives you, like when he smiles caresses and his mustache and smiles at you and says, hello, good day, sir. Thank you again for taking this matchup.
And make heart
and
signs.
Makes
heart signs.
It's obvious.
Peace.
We know that's that trash.
Oh, man. That's so offensive.
Him and David Tamer, it's just guaranteed fireworks from the minute.
No handshakes there, bro.
Sign me up. Sign me up. I love that, man. I love it. And it's funny because I know, like, for instance, Francis Ngannou and Derek Lewis is a fight that people want to see at heavyweight. And, you know, I at least have been of the mentality, like, listen, man, don't put two people on the rise together. But that's because heavyweight's thin, right? Yeah. You know what I mean? You got like a handful of people already, and a bunch of them are like kind of on their way out. I'm like, don't put them up against each other now. Lightweight? Mm. Come on, dude. Like, I could.
It's deep. Yeah, so, yeah.
75 people in the division? Mm-hmm. Bro. Put them up against each other now. Yes, it's two prospects, but one of them's going to get a big step up. And that fight, stylistically,
the build up.
You could put that on a main card. Dude, that Sweden show, you could put that on a main card. Is that an FS1 show, I think? Maybe a Fight Pass show?
If it's a Fight Pass show, it could be a co-main event.
Dude. Holla at your boys. Let's make that fight. All right, enough said there. We got to do this. Brad Scott, ask him. Great fight, right? I mean, dude, these two were – I'm not saying they were the most technical times. They both got a little sloppy here and there. But, dude, Askim was rocked, and he came back, and he was banging it out with Scott, and you had the Askim army over there just, Yorkshire, or whatever.
Yorkshire.
It was a great fight, man. Kudos to these guys. I thought Brad Scott did enough. He did get the nod by split decision. If you didn't watch this fight, man, go back and check it out because it's just two dudes going out and banging. You know what I mean? It was a lot of fun. I loved it. And I actually haven't seen it yet. I know it's up on the site, but I haven't seen it yet. Obviously, it's past 7 a.m. here, and we got to run to Heathrow in a little bit. But you guys are back there. Brad Scott had a breakdown in the back. Well, first of all, before I say the breakdown, who can throw out the line that he said earlier about the fight?
He said – and I'll quote you, because did it make the edit?
Yeah, it's there. I left it in.
It's in there. Yeah. He said that my asshole was twitching like a rabbit's nose, which means he was a little nervous.
I love that
over
dude.
The split decision.
I'm gonna re-edit and put that at the start of the interview.
Oh, dude, you should like cut this in B-roll with the rabbit nose, just pulsating like this.
On it.
Oh, that'd be great. No, but Brad Scott, emotional. I mean, I didn't see the video yet because we've been working, you know, whole night. But I was copied on the email, and I saw the screen grab that you sent, man. He, like, had his, you know, head buried in his hand or whatever. I mean, he got incredibly emotional, yeah?
Yeah. It was, was it Steve that asked the question?
It was Steve Cook, yeah.
Yeah, Steve Cook from Sevier asked the question. And he started to talk, and then he just went. It was like Brett Johns-esque, like from Belfast when he broke down. Just proper emotion there, just raw emotion just came out.
Basically said what? I mean, you've been thinking about walking away from the sport.
His back was against the wall. He felt. What did he say? What was the headline?
He was going to quit and decided not to and to give it one more go, and. He also thought that this fight might be one that ends his career if he lost. Mm. But he thought, I'm going to give this one more go. I'm going to really give this everything. And he'd said this straight away at the start of the interview. And he looked drained and tired, but happy. But I think as he was sitting there, the adrenaline was dumping. You know, the adrenaline was beginning to sort of fall away. and the enormity of what he'd achieved was beginning to set in, and the emotion was beginning to take over. And at that point, when Steve asked him, I think because Steve probably sensed that there might be something coming, he asked him about how he was feeling about it, and he just said how emotional he was, and then the next thing, he's got his head in his hands, and he was just saying how much it meant to him to be able to do it, to actually come back and win. I think he's only fought once a year for the last 3 years.
Yeah, he's struggled to get things going.
So he's suffered a lot, and he said he's got a suspected rotator cuff injury now as a result of that fight. So he's going to have to go and get an MRI. So fingers crossed that if he is injured, he's not on the shelf for a year again. It sounds like he's had a tough few years, and he deserves a little bit of good fortune, I think.
No doubt. The night opened up with Lena Landsberg picking up a unanimous decision win over Lucy Pudilova. I'm not going to lie. I had the fight scored a draw. I had a 10-9 Landsberg in the first two rounds, 10-8 Pudilova in the third. Man. And I know some people had Landsberg losing, and I don't have a problem with that because I thought the first round, I believe it was the first round where I had it incredibly close, where I kind of struggled to pick a winner. Credit to Landsberg for saying, like, hey, you know, she's the winner. And I don't know if she – the way I took that is not necessarily saying on the judges' scorecards, just saying, like, emotionally, you know, mentally, whatever. But, man, Pudilova, it was crazy. After the opening round, she literally, like, her knees buckled as she was walking back to the corner. I don't think she was actually wobbled. I think she was just so exhausted that she kind of like buckled a little bit. And it was kind of funny because I tweeted out that she is not sturdy. And the departing James Elliott tweeted me back, and he was like, "That definitely needs to be a part of the lexicon of MMA. Not sturdy." But she wobbled a little bit. But man, dude, did she show tremendous heart? Man, when Landsberg shot in on, you know, was pushing up against the cage in the clinch in the third round, and she just unleashed those elbows, and it was like punch, punch, punch. Oh wait, you're not gonna move? Elbow, elbow, elbow. Oh wait, you're still not gonna move? This is crazy. And you could see the blood like all over her leg, you know, spurting out of Landsberg's face. It was crazy. So kudos to Landsberg for getting the win. Maybe she just deserves it for. Because she ain't exactly had the easiest run in the UFC so far in her young UFC career. But I had this fight scored a draw. I'm assuming we'll definitely see Pudilova back. She came in on incredibly short notice. And Landsberg, man, the pictures are bad. And I know, again, you know, it's early in the morning here, but you saw her. We were over at the host hotel a few hours ago. You saw her. And I imagine she's going to get some weird looks at the airport here in a little bit.
Yeah, she might have to check her head in as excess baggage. It's that big now. She's basically growing half.
Yeah,
her head.
It is.
It's terrible. I mean, like, it's incredible to think that you have a fight with Cyborg and you get absolutely blasted by the most physically intimidating, hard punching female fighter in MMA, and she steps in there with this rather timid looking Czech fighter.
Yeah.
Who actually busts her up worse. Because she looked worse after this fight than she did after the... She looked not too good after the Cyborg fight, let's be honest. But she looked... And in the hotel, the swelling had really, really kicked in. And which I believe is one of your lines, isn't it? Have you?
He's cut off. I'll just turn his mic down here.
Yes! No, yeah, it was. Sorry. No, I was looking... This was at the time of this fight, it was the first fight on the card, right? So I was still setting things up. And every time I looked up at the screen, she had a nuke. She was bleeding from somewhere different, right? So every time I looked up.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, she. No, go on.
All right, well, listen, it's getting late.
Yeah.
Early, one of the two, and we need to pack up and head. I've got to fly home.
Tell them how many hours of sleep we're running on, J-Mo.
Like, for the week?
Yeah.
Like, 7? I don't know. We have not slept much this week. I am ready to get home and get some sleep. Yeah. I'm praying that we do that. But, hey... Team Europe did it big. Abby Subban, you crushed it this week. Thank you, my brother. Simon Head helped us out this week. Hopefully, He'll be helping us out in future weeks as well. Stay tuned for that. In the meantime, we got to go catch a cab here pretty soon. We're actually getting Fiasco Jones, taking him out to the airport as well.
Shamooga!
Well done. God bless. Love this team. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.